Hello.
And welcome to Season 4, Episode 2 of Voices, the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Ward, and today we are joined by Adrienne Cossum. She's a counselor with the Vancouver Gambling Support BC, and she's also the host of Fold'em, Help for Gambling Problems. So join me for Voices, the podcast. Hi, Adrienne. How are you feeling today?
Oh, you know, Brian, I'm really glad to be here with you. We've had this reversed where I am talking to you. And so now, it's a little bit nerve-wracking to be on the other side, but I'm happy to do it.
It's interesting that you say that because I was thinking the exact same thing after being on your podcast and just hearing this very professional kind of soothing tone and all that. It's like, oh, I hope I can live up to that on this side of the mic as well. So,
well, let's both put our doubts and nervousness aside and we'll just have a conversation.
We'll do it together and we'll get through it and it's all survivable.
Sounds good.
So I do want to thank you for taking time to talk with me today. And I like to start every episode with just a little bit of your history, kind of how did you get to where you are now? And so I'm going to give you the floor for that.
Oh, thank you. And it's hard to know where to start. So Adrienne Cossum, and I'm right now living and working in Vancouver, where I've been for approximately 20 years or so. And I think that people can get into working as a counselor, which is what I do, in through lots of different paths. And so the educational path that I went through was a social work degree. But you can do lots of different routes in. And I think what I'd say is I've always had just a curiosity about people's stories, about the way people navigate their lives. And so whether I was working kind of with communities, which I did in the beginning, or now with counseling, I just like tapping into that and being a part of kind of walking alongside them. And that's what I love about counseling is that typically when people come to counseling, it's because there's a curiosity or a readiness to do something different in their lives. And we just try and work together to spark that to happen. And so I think through all my various paths with counseling, I came upon working with gambling problems about 12 years ago or so. And it's been my primary focus where I work. I work in a family service agency, but through a program in British Columbia called Gambling Support BC, where I work with individuals and their families and groups, which is the part I really love.
And how did that kind of pivot or specialty come about? I mean, it like you said, there's a lot of pathways through it, but I'm curious how that kind of specific focus point really caught your eye, your mind, all of that.
Yeah. And it really was just that I work in a family service agency that offers services for a number of different challenges people are encountering, you know, substance addictions, behavioral gambling addictions, general things. And so through that program, there was an opportunity to work in that field. And so I went and I did some training and I had some great people mentoring me and it just came up. And I think I really like working with adults. And so it just was a place that seemed to be a fit for what I was interested in and what was available. So not that interesting of a story, but gotcha. But I think it speaks to, you know, I'll just say one thing, you know, initially you thought, well, gambling, like that's a bit of an odd area to focus on. And I think it just speaks to gambling is really kind of not understood in our society, right? And it's seen as a bit of this odd thing. I think it's becoming more common. I think kind of your question reflects that, but my initial reaction of working in that field sort of reflected that.
And in kind of addressing that oddity, is that how the Fold'em podcast got started, was to try to create a little bit more of a limelight? Or tell me a little bit about that endeavor.
Yeah, thanks for asking. So yeah, so about 2 years ago, through Gambling Support BC, we came up with an idea to offer a podcast. And so I think that came from the time that I'd spent, particularly in groups with people addressing this issue, and hearing like that there was so much wisdom and experience in those rooms and in those discussions. And I know that it's just the smallest tip of the iceberg that gets into those group rooms. And I just so much wanted to, yeah, to offer something to all the people out there struggling with gambling issues, but particularly what I was hearing in the group rooms, offering that to them so that they're not feeling so alone. And so I think, yeah, I think what you're saying, Brian, is that I think we're both aware that there's a lot of people living with this issue who don't feel like they know about places to turn to for help, or they don't feel it's okay or legitimate, or I'm not, but a lot of things that hold people back.
Yeah, certainly stigma combined with kind of a self-preservation mentality. I can see a lot of different ways that people feel isolated from any sort of treatment, and that is something that we will talk about. But I also just want to express the gratitude that I've talked with quite a few podcasters over the last couple of years. A lot of times the idea of the lived experience and sharing that lived experience does have value, but I also think that there's value to be had in creating something of a public exploration of a clinician side of it, right? And being able to have somebody with that kind of lived experience kind of share that journey too, can open a lot of eyes to what counseling can provide, and how a clinician might be able to support somebody with a problem gambling disorder, even when they're not in the room, right? This idea of advocacy and awareness existing outside of like an office. So I do want to thank you for that effort, because I do think that it is valuable, and my experience on your podcast kind of reinforced that notion.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and I think I believe that too, right? That there's just something different then that counselors can also bring to that journey. And so, yeah, so Foldum, it features people with lived experience, but usually in episodes alongside them, I'll get one of my colleagues on. And so there's different topics. And so we bring in both angles on it. And that's what we brought to this particular podcast.
I love it. So gonna kind of shift gears a little bit then, because one of the things that we've been talking about is this idea of community mutual aid groups and counseling, and how they can kind of work together, or how one may benefit the other. And so from a clinician standpoint, I do think that there's this growing awareness that there's value to be found in both of them, that they're no longer viewed as like competitive, where which one is most effective, but rather how do we work together with them to be the most effective. And so I'm interested in your perspective in language approaches and all of that. Let's hash it out.
Yes. Yes. As a counselor, I think I would say to people things like, you can definitely get some benefit from counseling. This will be of help to you. And if you're willing to consider adding in more, in particularly in terms of groups and in particularly in terms of peer support groups, my experience has been just that this will go so much farther for you. And in particular, I think I would say, you can hear me say something, but when you hear somebody say the same thing, it's because they've lived through it. It just lands so differently for you. And so have both in your life. And then I think the second thing that groups, particularly community aid peer support groups, do really, really well is busting the guilt and the shame, the tough feelings around it. It's just harder to do in an individual counseling session. There's something about just sitting in a room with people, whether it's virtual or in person, in which you just look around and you see I'm not the only one. And then you hear them saying stuff that you've been thinking in your head and seeing them moving on in their lives. that just allows a little bit more acceptance and compassion to come in. It's just this visual experience thing. And so that's why I think I just where I can, I encourage and nudge and really promote the combination of both.
And how often would you say, I'm not asking for exact numbers or statistics, but how many people come into like a counseling session having already familiarized themselves with a program of recovery? And then how often is it something that's invited to try kind of after that first session?
So kind of how many people in the big picture would have both in their lives? I'm going to guess off the top of my head, but I would say maybe 60% have both, and that might be either that they've come in already connected with GA in particular, or that they're willing to step out and to try some sort of group experience. Yeah, there's still a significant number of people who, for various reasons, aren't willing to do that combination. Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can. So my journey did take me from getting introduced to both of them almost simultaneously. I mean, the same day that I had my first counseling session was the same day that I went to my first Gamblers Anonymous meeting. And so for me, that introduction of both of them kind of meant that they were tethered from the beginning, but I know that that's not everybody's story, right? I also know that there's not a lot of people who are aware. I think most people are aware of the 12-step model, but particularly in things like Alcoholics Anonymous, it's kind of viewed as 12-step is Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's not really this awareness that actually there's quite a few anonymous groups attached to that model, and then even less awareness around other programs of recovery, Recovery Dharma, Smart Recovery, Celebrate Recovery. And I am curious as to, first of all, do you have a lot of familiarity with a few different programs? And then how do you help to kind of identify which one would be most appropriate for somebody to go and try?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what I'd add to that list then is then typically most counseling services would then also offer additional groups as well. And so I know in Gambling Support BC, we offer different variations of that, like a drop-in support group, a more educational treatment program. And yeah, and I really, when we spoke, Brian, I really appreciated that you helped me really get clarity actually on the range of gambling recovery programs that are out there and just kind of switch my head to thinking, if this is the smorgasbord, which one might be a fit with this person at that point, you know, in their journey. And so just remind me again of the question you just asked about that.
Yeah. And so if there is a program, if somebody's willing to try a program, how do you kind of go about identifying what sort of program they might find benefit in? Do you simply say there's mutual aid available, go try it out? Or do you have kind of a, well, given the values that we've talked about, I'm aware of Smart Recovery or of Celebrate Recovery or Gamblers Anonymous. What's the kind of method for inviting people into that world?
Yeah, so probably the second one you said. And so I might end up talking about this later on. But I think just as you do, Brian, in your peer mentoring, in my first contact with people, I'm just really listening closely to them. And so what I know is that when people come in for help, whether that's to show up at a meeting or to see a counselor, they want something different for themselves, right? Something's not working right now. And so I'm listening to hear about what that is. And I usually am also then asking, so what are your ideas about how to get there, right? So if they just say, I'm just tired of feeling so miserable and crappy about myself and what gambling brings in, and I just want to let go of it and feel more peace in my life. Well, then I'm starting to hear that. And I say, so what do you think is going to move you towards that? And what I find, you know, when I talked about counseling being walking alongside people, it's about catching the wave of what people already are thinking about how to make some changes in their life. So if I hear people just kind of talking about, I think just talking about things, just having a space to talk, I might then shift them into something more like, you know, like a GA or our support group. if people start saying to me, I need to learn things, you know, I need to learn about this issue, or I need to learn some skills for handling stress, then that might shift me into, well, what about smart recovery? Like, that's, you know, this is what they do, or what about one of our treatment programs? So that's kind of the nuts and bolts in the first conversations.
I would say very similarly, right? If a client's talking to me and we start getting into that realm and it's like, well, I don't want to do a 12-step meeting, or I'm not interested in learning about other programs. Instead of focusing on what they're not willing to do, trying to really isolate what they are willing to do, and then leaning into that a little bit more. I have this tendency to say, let's not focus on what we're not going to do, but what we are going to do. And so I think that that is, I agree with you. That's also my approach.
And I think, you know, when people are ready to address gambling in their lives, it's two parts. You know, it's one, it's trusting that you yourself know what's the direction you want to head things in, and you've probably got some good idea around what's going to fit for you, but then an openness and a willingness to getting some guidance, right? And maybe stretch yourself out of your comfort zone. So maybe groups to kind of go, ugh. But that's where it's like, okay, but I know I need to talk about this, and I'm going to take the guidance of Brian or Adrian and try, even though this scares the crap out of me.
And there's also this idea that what if it doesn't work, right? How do we back up and say, well, was there any value to it? And if so, is there a way to kind of tweak the approach to find more value in it as opposed to just disregarding it, right? As well, that'll never work. And so then as a counselor, how does the kind of identifying the programs that may be of value, hypothetical, right? So somebody says, I'd be interested. They go to their first 12-step meeting, they come back, and they start utilizing that language. Is that something that kind of shifts your approach, or is it something that kind of exists somewhat independently? How do the two kind of start to entangle in your plan for working with people?
I think two things. One is that I see myself as like a collaborator and guide. So if somebody was finding 12-step really helpful, I definitely would want to hear about that and integrate it into our conversation. Because if something's working, we want to keep, as you said, let's do more, let's keep building on that. And I recognize I haven't been through 12-step myself, and so I don't know it so well. So that's where, you know, then I would just be guiding that person. Okay, well, how can you keep getting guidance? Like, can you get a sponsor, or can you listen to these podcast episodes about step four if you've got questions about it? Something like that. Is that what you meant?
Very much so, and I love the kind of humility that's attached to that, right? I may not have that much insight into it, but here are some opportunities to expand knowledge around it, that come a little bit more from the source. So yeah, I can certainly appreciate that, and I think it does show a level of humility and humanity to be able to acknowledge that there are going to be elements of your recovery journey that I don't necessarily have firsthand experience or even a lot of knowledge about. And that can help kind of build the rapport and all of that, which does kind of segue nicely into something else that I wanted to talk about, which was how to make counseling work for you. And so rather than kind of asking the question, I'd rather like to hear your free associative thoughts around how people can kind of best make counseling work for them.
Yeah, and I'm pretty passionate around this. So my colleagues and I in Gambling Support BC use an approach called feedback-informed treatment. And so it really is the principles around that is that counseling is a collaborative process that's done with the counselor and the person coming to work with them. So Yeah, let me just talk in general. I'll talk about how counseling does work for people, and then I'll talk a bit about how to make it work for you. And so one of the things that we know just from research, but I think also just from experience, is that counseling actually works. And so what we know is that the people, the people who are going to counseling and attend counseling often do better than I'd say 80% of the people in that group who try and address gambling issues, but they don't go to counseling. So this isn't just about gambling. It's just this is something generally we know. It works. And I think what's also really cool is that counseling works faster than you would expect. So I think we all have seen enough images, of going to counseling and you lie on the sofa and that it goes on for years and years and years. But that's actually not necessarily the case. You can for sure choose that if you want. But what we know is that roughly 64 to 74% of people who go to counseling will experience significant improvement. And so what I mean by that is that you'll start to feel better and you'll start to kind of function better in day-to-day life. So counseling isn't just about fixing a problem, it's about having you feel better. And that's a pretty high number, right? It's like roughly 75% of people feel better. And what's quite amazing is that roughly, so this is about 35 to 65% of people experience that within the first 7 visits. And that 20 to 40% of people go to counseling feel better within the first, I think it is 3 visits. Like that's outstanding. Like that you can go and have 3 appointments. So that's just one thing I always just want to pe let people know is, if there's any reluctance around trying counseling, is just remember that number that generally it works for people.
And not to sound contrarian, but what happens when it doesn't?
Exactly. And that's what I think is the responsibility of counselors to pay attention to and to keep in mind, right? So there is that roughly, it could be anywhere 20, 25 to 35% of people who don't experience improvement and they're feeling better. And I really think counselors need to pay attention to and address that, not keep doing something that's not working, right? It's kind of like if a doctor prescribed a medication for something and it clearly wasn't addressing, let's say, the pain issue, well, you don't keep prescribing the same medication, you try something different. And I think that's an accountability piece for counselors. But for our listeners here, what I would say is when you step into counseling is just the things to watch for are, one, do you have a sense that your counselor understands you? They get you. They're working with what you want to see for yourself and how you want to go about doing it. Do you feel like they're coming alongside you, or do you feel like they're pushing or pulling you in a different direction? And the extent to which they're walking alongside you is a good predictor that you're going to have good results. If you're feeling like you're in a bit of a tussle with your counselor, then that's something important to speak to them about. I think the other one is just tracking for yourself, like in those first 7 appointments, to what degree am I feeling better? To what degree am I functioning better in my home and my work or life situations? And if it's not, if it's staying the same or getting worse, it's definitely speaking up about that. And we can talk about how to speak up, but that's, I think, what I encourage people to pay attention to and expect from counseling.
Yeah, I'm aware that the counseling that I've done automatically has an acorn attached to it, which is kind of a self-evaluation of services, right? I don't remember what the acronym stands for specifically, but it basically says, are you talking about the things that you find valuable? Do you feel like your counselor is hearing you, and do you feel like you are seeing progress? And I think that it's a great way to kind of let clients know that they do have a voice in this service. And also, I'd be curious about people maybe who suffer from anxiety or something like that, or have some hesitancy to be open and honest in that feedback because they don't want to get the counselor in trouble. Maybe they blame themselves for their lack of progress, things like that. And so do you have any thoughts or words for people who might be experiencing something like that?
Yeah. Well, I remember a phrase I heard you say once, which is that this is important enough to not let a setback hold you back. This is my paraphrasing you. And so, yeah, I completely understand. You know, myself, when I go to see, let's say, a doctor, I'm usually tongue-tied. I can't help it. I get intimidated by their authority and their white coats and stuff. So that's normal. And yet this is really important, right? This is your life and your recovery. And so whatever way that you can find to speak up, right, whether it's about just specific feedback about that session, you know, I had really hoped we would talk about this and we didn't get into it enough, or you're really recommending that I do this, but I'm not ready for that yet. So any feedback you can, I think I encourage you, and maybe if you can't do it on your own, maybe there's an ally, somebody who can help you, you know, communicate that. Maybe it's the receptionist, you know, whatever can work for you. And then I think, you know, the second thing is knowing that it's okay to also speak up and say, I need more than this, right? So most counseling models, it's that 1 hour a week, right? And many people in the beginning need something more to get their momentum going. And it's, that's not insulting to say, I think I need more to get my momentum going. What are the possibilities of what we can add on to this, right? And talk to the counselor about that. And then the last thing is, you know, no counselor is going to be a fit for everybody. That's to be expected. And so even though it might feel awkward, it's absolutely okay to back out and try somebody else. And my hope would be is that most places where counseling is available would have opportunities to do that. And they, that's just due part of how they do their work.
Yeah. Being able to recognize as a counselor, as the clinician, that not everybody is going to appreciate the approach or find as much value in it as someone else. So if there's adjustments that can be made in that relationship, then okay, let's explore that. And if there isn't, that's okay too. It's okay that this fit didn't happen. Let's try to find you a resource that will be the right fit for you. And by the way, I love the acronym of feedback informed treatment fit.
Yeah,
very clever.
And what I'll just say about that, I mean, for people out there who are sports fans, in Vancouver here, we have the hockey team, the Canucks, right? And we've been going through a couple of different coaches over the last couple of seasons. And I think what's really interesting is they can monitor the stats of specific players, right? So you switch up the coach and all of a sudden one player is performing so much better, but not all players are. And so that fit is there. And coaching is quite different from counseling, but I just would say it's a really similar thing, that personalities and styles, people are going to need something different to get their momentum going.
And one of the beauties of that difference is that there are other counselors, right? I mean, if a team hires a coach, they're going to kind of rely on an overall improvement under that coach. But with regards to counseling, mentoring, even like GA meetings, right? If one isn't fitting quite right, there are other opportunities. It doesn't mean that the system failed. It just means that there's another option out there. And then you can even branch that out into other programs of recovery, other therapeutic models that might be a little bit more in line with what your goals are. So there really is this kind of personal and then structural dynamic of, maybe it's not the person, but the dynamic of the structure is appropriate. So it's just finding that other person or that other personal relatable experience. That wasn't the right term.
And I think that can change over time too, right? And so maybe I've got a good collaboration going with somebody, but we kind of run our course with it, right? Like I say to people, there's going to be a time where You think you're thinking in your head, I think I've heard everything she has to say on this, right? And I can predict what she's going to say. Absolutely. And so then it's might be a time then when you need to go and hear something different, right? And it reminds me of your own story of you p adding in smart recovery at a different point. And yeah, you're going to keep shifting what works for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And all of this makes a lot of sense, particularly when we think about like the trans-theoretical model, which I did an episode about in the last season, where once you kind of get into that maintenance phase and figuring out what is working and what kind of adjustments can be made to still keep it relevant, but also recognize that there's room for sustainability and room for being able to cut some of the stuff out because you found your value. Like you said, right? Once they're able to kind of pare it back to you, your own insights, like, okay, you've internalized this stuff, right? It's making sense for you. And therefore, I am happy that you've kind of outgrown this service or this particular need that you had that I was able to provide for. And I find myself telling clients that I will celebrate with them when I'm no longer needed, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So when people are in this kind of advocacy realm where they're recognizing that maybe there's a need for a change, we've talked a little bit about how to do that, right? Whether it's to the counselor or to some adjacent, the receptionist is the example you gave. Do you have any other thoughts around how to kind of take that empowerment for oneself in that realm?
And just say a bit more what you're thinking about that or what you were meaning or an example.
So because we were able to kind of talk about it, mainly I'm asking, was there anything else that you wanted to say about it? But kind of the example that I gave, or the question that I asked will have this example attached to it.
Yeah.
If somebody has, say, tried to talk to another staff member, or their feedback reporting is showing that there's not a lot of efficiency or efficacy in this treatment, is there any other steps that could be taken that, whether it's kind of climbing the ladder, grievances, right? All of that. Basically, I want people to know that there are opportunities and if there's a kind of a need to escalate, what can that look like? And is there a way to kind of keep a cohesive relationship with the structure without feeling like you're tattling on a counselor or something like that, right?
Yeah, it can feel dicey, like especially if you're in a small community and maybe this is the only place that you know of to go get some help, then that does feel awkward and dicey. And I think you and I would both just say is that with the journey of recovery, the key is persistence. Persistence and trusting yourself, right? And so there often are maybe other solutions and sources of support out there. So stay with it. But I think what I'd come back to is some basics around clients' rights as you access counseling services. And you can access counseling from lots of different places, some agencies, some workplace benefits, but most, I think, counseling services should give you something in writing that explains kind of what your rights are, but what the procedures are if there's any concern. So I know at the family service agency I work for, there in that package there'd be say, if you have any concerns, take this step and then takes this step and this step. And so for sure, taking it up the ladder to a supervisor is explained to them. But what I would just say the basics would be is, absolutely, you when you access any service, you have a right to be treated with courtesy and dignity and respect and fairness, regardless, of what race, ethnicity, gender, age, sexual orientation you bring in. You have absolutely have the right to say no to services or to say enough, I'm going to pause. You definitely are allowed to speak up about what you do want and to ask for people to help you find some other help if you're not getting it. And so be a part of the collaboration. And with that, you deserve to have privacy and confidentiality. So So those are just, I think, basics to remind yourself that you do have power and authority and rights within this vulnerable place of asking for help.
Thank you. And the reason that I asked, I understand if that was a little bit of a curveball question, like, yeah, but what next, right? Is because particularly here in the US, it does seem that we are running into some infrastructure issues, right? Where there's a lot of agencies are like at capacity. And so it's like if you can get in to an agency and talk to a counselor, there's this worry that like that might be the only option, that there's not a lot of opportunity outside of what you were able to kind of get into. And so I wanted to, coming from somebody in that field, still create this idea that you still have rights, right? It isn't so desperate. It isn't so dystopian that, like, maybe it does mean backing up and putting a pause on counseling until a more appropriate opportunity presents itself, but you aren't trapped, right? It's still very much based on your values, your decisions. You have choice and rights and a voice in this matter. So I don't want people to think that they are trapped in a situation that they don't find valuable at best and find harmful at worst, right? And it doesn't necessarily mean that anybody's at fault either, right? That sometimes it's about the fit, sometimes it's about additional trainings needed, some education. And all of those things can be addressed in a very professional way that
For sure. And so if you don't know how to address it, then go talk to somebody. Like, I kind of role play it out. Say, I don't know how to say this to my counselor, but I'm just not doing it with her. Like, but you can, whether it's a peer mentor or somebody in GA, just practice finding the words. And if you can't do it verbally, then write it, put it in writing. And once you said, give it to that receptionist or give it to the manager, or there's lots of creative ways.
And also want to be very clear that I'm not speaking from a lot of personal experience here, only that there is something of it could happen. Hypothetically, it could happen that somebody feels somewhat stuck or trapped. And so just trying to cover the bases there. So
Rick. And like we said, so we started off with counseling typically works, right? So it's chances are it's going to go pretty smoothly your first time through.
yes. And so I'm curious, do you have any other kind of closing thoughts around what we've talked about today? I certainly want to give you room for people to find out where to find your podcast and any kind of closing thoughts around this.
Well, I guess what I'd say is that what's been so exciting to see during and after COVID is the expansion of options for people facing gambling issues, particularly online, right? There's so many more options for people, particularly in smaller communities, to access help. And so I think that there's more potential than ever to find fit for yourself. And I would say just to, it, but it's a bit of a tough issue. So when the tricky thought comes in your head of, nah, I don't need that, I can do this on my own, I just invite you, that's that stretching yourself part, to be open and curious about, no, maybe there is something more that would be helpful for me. Counseling, some trying some of these groups.
Okay. Well, and then where can people find the Foldum podcast?
Right. And so we both talk about this, which is that listening to podcasts can be an excellent first step in, right? If you're not ready to jump into seeing somebody, learn from and get the help from listening to others' experiences. And so the podcast that we produce through Gambling Support BC is called Foldum, FOLD space EM, Help for Gambling Problems. And you can find it on any of the podcast apps. If you're not a podcast app person, then there's a website that goes along with it, gamblingproblemhelp.ca, and all the episodes are available there. You can just listen to them on your browser.
One of my favorite parts about your podcast, and this is something I don't do, but once I saw that you did it, I was like, oh, there's an idea, is the blog that's associated with it, kind of the breakdown of what the podcast kind of talked about and included. I just think that that's great for people who may not have the capability to, or maybe even the time to say, listen to a half hour conversation, but they can still kind of read about what was talked about, spark that interest. And so I loved that idea,
Oh, good.
and that comes around eventually for this podcast. Okay, well, I so much thank you for your time talking with us today. It is a rare treat to have somebody from like a whole other country come in and talk about their experiences. So I really do appreciate that, and I hope that we can kind of stay connected and hopefully be able to meet in person someday. I think that would be
Yeah, that would be great. There's this ongoing talk about having a high-speed train between Vancouver, Seattle, and Portland. So maybe it'll be even easier for us to go see meet each other in person. But yeah, keep doing the great work you're doing, Brian, and it's always a pleasure.
I want to thank Adrian again for joining us. And there will be links in the show notes to the blog of her podcast, as well as where you can find a direct link to her podcast. But it's available wherever you listen to your podcasts. And again, that is Foldum, Help for Gambling Problems. As always, today's episode was brought to you by Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery, and they can be found at vpgr.net. Thanks for joining us today on Voices, the podcast.